Live 95 is Cullman's Independent Radio. And now, it's time for Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Cullman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Cullman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And no lawyer on this show actually helped write that disclaimer. And now, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Nethery.
Little D in the house tonight. Big D's off.
Messing with that phone.
I'm trying to get it set up right. It's driving me crazy. It keeps falling.
Well, they make selfie sticks. Do they make, like, selfie stands?
I've been wanting a tripod. That's what I want. Tripod. Yeah. When it sits up about that high.
So when's your birthday?
May the 20th.
Oh. Done passed. So you're going to wait till Christmas then,
won't you? Welcome to Understanding the Law. In with me tonight is the marvelous Melvin Hastings. How are you doing?
Fine, I guess. I'm tired.
So you rode in on your Harley.
I went, yeah. I got it back last Thursday. That thing's been going for a couple of years, getting designed and painted and just renewed. So I was glad to get it back.
You want to tell everybody about your tank you had painted?
Well, it's the whole bike now.
Oh,
the whole bike's painted. Oh. Of course, it's in KISS. So, yeah, I got it. I mean, got Simmons and Paul Stanley on the tank and got Ace Freely on one saddlebag and Paul.
See, do y'all see how much Understanding the Law is helping his law practice?
It is good.
It is good.
You notice I said a couple of years. That's because it paid for all this thing, yeah. Mm-hmm. Got KISS across the front. It's pretty neat little bike.
So you want to do a shout out who done your work?
Well, Burgess did the painting, and then Donald Walker did all the artwork. I mean, and that's unbelievable. And then Jim down at Head Hoggers is what they're called. They're down at Feeling right now, but they're moving up here on 157 at Child Haven Road. They're behind the stockyard. They're moving there. He does all kinds of custom bike work. Works on Harley Davidson, all kinds of custom bikes and stuff. He set my bike up and did all my lights and painted a lot of stuff on it. So, and then let me see who I can't remember their name. The guys are powder coated down there at Feeling. I should know their names, but. Yeah, I had a lot of people contribute to that bike. So
awesome. I'll take some pictures of you and put them on Understanding the Law so everyone can see them. So you'll check my Facebook out and follow us on Understanding the Law on Facebook. And I will post some pictures of Melvin's killer bike with KISS.
Pretty cool.
So what have you been doing this week?
This week, I'm trying to think what I had yesterday. I had court yesterday. I can't remember what we did. It wasn't nothing significant, but what I did today is a lot more significant, and I kind of thought, you know, we haven't really talked that much about adoptions. We kind of hit sometimes on it in juvenile matters and stuff, but this, I've been doing this 16 years. I have done a kind of a contested adoption before, and that case involved Department of Human Resources. So what happens is DHR got this child. They had custody of this child. Parents never did what they're supposed to. Excuse me. And the apparently, I assume, because it's the law, when DHR gets custody of them, there's no family members that wanted that wanted or was able to take care of this child. So this child came a call of a ward of the state saying, hey, look, this child has nobody, no relative resources, parents not able and capable of take care of this child. So the state ended up terminating parental rights. So the parents lost all their rights to the child. So you had this couple that was the foster parents at one time. This child got removed, and then they filed to have to adopt this child. Well, since DHR had custody of the child, they had a consent. Well, DHR wouldn't consent to it. They had ideas for this child to go somewhere else, which is, unfortunately, which is their right. So I had represented a couple trying to get this child from DHR. I mean, trying to get this child, trying to adopt this child, and without their consent, it was just unsuccessful, unfortunately, for this couple, because they really wanted that, because they had this child in their home for a while. But today I did something new I haven't done in 16 years, where normally in an adoption, if you don't have rights terminated, if the parental rights are not terminated, so in this case, there's a mom, she's married now, so she got stepdad. Stepdad won't adopt this child. Well, there's father right here, which is who I represent, the father. And this was out of the county. It was down south of here. But anyway, so stepfather filed an adoption petition. Dad says, no, I'm not consenting to it, because you got to have his consent. So what happens is, since his rights hadn't been terminated, and they haven't terminated his rights, we had to defend something that's called implied consent, which means, hey, you know, you've kind of consented to this adoption by abandoning this child. And what that means is what the law says. If you haven't supported your child, try to contact your child or do anything within 6 months, then it is implied that you consented to the adoption. I don't like it. I don't think it's fair, which legislature never asked me what I care, you know, do I like it, if you went through adoption the other way, you'd have to have your rights terminated, and it would be different. They couldn't have terminated this guy's rights. I don't think there's enough set of facts to terminate his parental rights. But they produced, I guess the judge felt like they produced enough evidence saying that he didn't have contact with his child for 6 months, and didn't support his child for 6 months. So he says, I'm finding that you implied that you consented to this. It was implied consent. And he let the other people adopt the child. Yep, let stepfather adopt the child.
So you still had to, even though you don't agree with that law, you had to abide by that law.
Yeah. We're stuck with it. Now, we're going to appeal the case. I didn't tell the boy. I was like, look, you just give me the money, pay the cost of this thing. I'm going to appeal it. I'm not going to charge him any attorney fees for it, because I just didn't like the way the whole situation was. So we're going to appeal it and see where we go from there. But that, you know, the important lesson out of that case. And I'll have phone calls coming up with this kind of information. There's a lot of single parents that's got a child that the other parent doesn't have contact with or doesn't support or whatever. And I mean, with this ruling today, and I mean, it's the law. It's a law out there. If you can prove 6 months of abandonment.
And non-support. And non-support,
yes, non-contact. A step-parent can adopt that child.
Mm-hmm.
So that is some serious...
And in some ways, I think that that's good, and in some ways, I don't.
It is fair.
Because you're stripping that parent of their right.
That's the key.
And that, to me, is not fair, because it should be a consensual thing for a parent to say, okay, I don't want my rights to this child any longer. I know I brought this child into the world. I don't support this child. I have no contact with his child, and it becomes, you know, self-professed knowledge that that's what they choose to do.
So my mind immediately goes to, how do you prove this? All right, so let's say you've got maybe shared custody, but you know that the other estranged parent's not taking care of the kid, and maybe they're into drugs, and maybe you need to get the kid out of there, and then you make national news because you kidnap your own kid or whatever. How does all that play out in the court of law when you're in a situation like that? Melvin, I did that. How do you defend
me? That was great. You know, well, listen, and here's...
And now you have the rest of the show.
All right, that's fine. And here's the situation that we had in this case. When you got the father saying, you know, look, mom is the reason that I don't have contact with my child. You know, she was keeping the child from me. She moved. I didn't have her phone number. I was trying to contact her. She refused to talk to me.
Wow. Would that not be kidnapping just to start with?
Exactly. You know, and that's kind of the issue that we have. So, this is what's significant about kind of like the facts in this case. remember that 6 months, and the deal with adoptions is it's statutory law, and you got to follow it to the T. It can't be 5 months and 30 days or what, or 29 days or whatever else. I mean, it's got to be 6 months. So there was some testimony about different contacts and times and stuff like that. So when we get the, what happens when you appeal it? We've talked about appeals before, but when you appeal this, an adoption goes, anything from probate court goes straight to the Supreme Court. So this case would go to the Supreme Court of Alabama. You'd file a notice of appeal. It goes to the Supreme Court of Alabama. And there'll be a transcript of what happened. So these proceedings were recorded. There's just a audio recorder in there. So that audio recorder, the tape, will go to a court reporter that will transcribe everything that was said, and then I'll get a copy of it. The other side will get a copy of that record. We'll get all the pleadings that was filed in this petition, and then you just file a brief. You don't get a whole new trial. You don't ever meet the judges on the Supreme Court or nothing like that. This case will be sent to the, it's just a writing. I'll file a brief. The other side will file a reply brief, or that's called an appellee's brief. And then I will apply a reply brief to that. So I get two and they get one since I've got the burden on the case. I'm the appellate. So all it is you read, you write the law, you cite certain parts of the transcript, the record, certain parts of the documents. And then you cite law and you tell the Supreme Court, look, this is the facts. This is what's testified to. The law says this. The trial judge did wrong. The probate judge did wrong in this case because this is an adoption is clearly in probate court. There's exceptions, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But the, so one of the issues that sticks out in my mind, because like you had talked about, Jay, that the issue about kidnapping or contact and all that stuff, that's kind of facts that's left up to the judge. The judge decides, do I believe this or do I not believe this? Do I believe that the mom was withholding visits or the dad was holding visits? Do I believe that the dad really wasn't visiting?
And, you know, that ties right into Rudy Giuliani on a Sunday news show going, truth is not truth.
Yeah, you're right.
But let me ask you a question. Like, how is the no contact laid out? Like, phone calls, text messages, Facebook messages, those types of things.
Well, see,
do they hold up in court?
Yes, and that is... And we're kind of jumping ahead. That is something.
Because I'm trying to understand the no contact thing. I understand not picking up for visitation, withholding, not withholding, not showing up for pickup.
The thing is, how do you prove that? You know, so.
Y'all hang on just a second. Y'all are confusing me here. Let me just unplug that. Y'all are in different chairs, I think. So I'm adjusting the wrong things. And
yes, we're in different chairs. I think it's
okay.
Me.
Now, yeah. Okay.
It's me that you.
Because I'm making somebody louder and somebody quieter.
Yes. All right. I think it's Melvin is louder.
Let's
than
try me. That again. All right.
All right. So what happens is, that's why I don't like this. I just, when I did this and during it and afterwards, I just thought there's just something about this that I don't like. Cause how do you prove it? Okay. So let's say you gave an example of drugs. Let's say the father is going to a rehab for a year. He did it voluntarily. Maybe even being court ordered because he was on drugs and this and that, didn't work, didn't pay any money, and was gone for a year, didn't contact the child. So that 6 months, that's kind of an easy thing to prove, probably, that you didn't have contact because if you're in prison.
So
you're in prison. That's why I don't like it. I'll just be straight up. I don't like it. But in a situation where you got one parent saying one thing and you got one parent saying the other, then of course, whatever text you can get in, you can kind of get in, and then whatever Facebook messages or emails or whatever. But that is another technical issue. That's an evidentiary issue that gets tough. I mean, it's not. I mean, people say, "Well, I could be a lawyer too." Good luck, man. Because you try. I mean,
seems like you need a private investigator for that part.
You do. You get a hacker, and you get
you
it.
You need the Russians.
But the it's the legal maneuvers you got to get that in. I mean, so I bring a Facebook message and I say, "Look, Judge, I want you to see this Facebook message that Danielle showed me." Danielle said, "I didn't send that to you." well, how do I prove that you sent that to me? You know what I mean? Because you can, even worse is the text and stuff, because a lot of times it'd just be the phone at the time, it'd just be a name. It'd just be a name. It might not even be a number. It'd be somebody's name. Well, I got this from so and so. Well, I can take a number and change it and attach Jay's name to it and send me all kinds of ugly messages.
That's true.
And there's even apps that you can do that
stuff.
That's true. So the question is how reliable is that information? And that's where the judges really come into play. Some judges allow it, some don't allow it. And really what it should be, it's tough. I guess you allow it and just take it with a grain of salt. You know what I'm saying? You know, that may be yours, it may not be yours. What else do you cut?
Okay, you know. Question here. Does the child have any say in this adoption?
Mm-mm.
Do they
Absolutely.
Ever really? Do they ever testify that
no.
I don't want this person to be my dad or my mom, and I want
no.
Then what? How is that if it's in family court?
No. Remember, adoptions are in probate court, so the child does it. Testify, but
once we get to Supreme Court, does that change?
No, because remember, a Supreme Court.
So they don't
court,
have a voice.
No, a Supreme. Well, they do. Remember, your Supreme Court, the way your Court of Civil Appeals, your Court of Criminal Appeals, and then the Supreme Court, the highest court in Alabama, the way they work, they just review records. They never see the people.
Right, I remember.
They never
this.
Talk. Remember, they never talk to the lawyers. They never see the judge or talk to the judge or do anything else. All they do is read your brief, your 10, 12, 15, 20-page brief that cites facts, cites something about the case. So in my brief, it'll talk about the case. It'll talk about the parties in the case. It'll talk about the facts and what was testified to in trial. Then it'll talk about the law. And then, like, for instance, I will say the petitioner failed to meet their burden of proof in this case by failing to prove implied consent. You know, didn't prove 6 months no contact or something. So then I'd go back through my transcript of what was testified to today and say, look, you know, they said that they got a message from him here in May and then he contacted him again in October. Well, that ain't 6 months. You know, so it's real particular. So that's the kind of stuff that you do in these briefs. You lay out facts, you lay out the law. And then you got an argument, argument section. Well, then they get to argue the same thing back, and then I get to file a reply brief. And a lot of time, what happens in appeals courts is most appeals, the overwhelming majority of appeals come back and says the trial court didn't abuse their discretion. The judge was sitting there. They listened to the evidence. They looked at the people. They observed the witnesses. They made a ruling. Unless you find something that they did something just totally off the wall, we're going to defer to them, and they affirm their decision.
All right, so two things. First of all, if you want to call in and participate, because I'm sure a lot of ears are burning out there.
Yeah.
256-737-9505. And if you forget the last four digits, just look at your radio dial, 9505.
Yeah.
The second thing, Melvin, this may insult you, so I apologize before I say it, before we
okay.
jump right in on this, but, you know, I'm always hearing on the street, because when I'm not in the radio station, I'm on the street somewhere, you know, it's the person with the most money is going to win the trial. How true is that?
It does.
Because I know there are people out there who don't have money that are going through this.
Exactly. And I think what happens is the more money you have, of course, you have a different choices in your law firms that you pick, and I'm not shy about saying stuff. Everybody knows. Everybody's not naive. Sometimes that does matter. It absolutely 100% matters. You know, and when you're, you know, sometimes when you're out of town, which I was an out of town lawyer.
No, that how does it matter? Just because how good the brief is written or the fact?
No,
the
no,
way
no,
that
no, no,
presented,
no. Let's go back to the trial thing. Let's forget the Supreme Court thing. So in the trial thing, so you have firms and you know what judge you're in front of.
Name recognition?
Yeah, name type stuff.
Let's not mention my name.
Exactly. So that kind of stuff comes out. Plus, you know, if somebody comes in here and says, Melvin, you know, I got this situation and gives you $5,000 to help them out. And then you got somebody comes in here and says, man, I got this situation. They got $500,000 to help you out. Well, guess what? I can probably say, you know what? I'm not doing any more cases. I'm not doing any more work. We're going to take this $500,000. You know, that's kind of how it happens too. You can hire, okay, let's go to the private investigators. Let's go to the subpoenas. Let's go to getting witnesses out there and doing things. So, the more money that you have available, the more opportunities you have to be successful. Not every time are you successful, but there's more opportunities to be successful.
Because every action that is done in a attorney's office has a fee behind it. If you file a piece of paper, it has a fee.
Yeah.
If you have to do some kind of exploratory where you're having to dig up information, if you send out a subpoena to show up at court, every little box has to be checked and every little box has to be paid for is the way that it is.
Well, here's something to think about as we go to break. All right, so I'm a... what's the doctor that makes the most money? Like an anesthesiologist or something?
I don't know that they do. Dermatologists.
Dermatologists.
No, right. Dermatologists really? Make money, yes.
And my wife likes to play with flowers. And so, you know, she took some of my money and started one of those nursery things. All right. So then we get into a child custody situation. But she only has access to my money. Let's go into that after the break, shall we?
All right. We'll be back.
And then I'll shut up and let y'all have the rest of the show to yourselves.
This is Understanding the Law. We'll be right back.
Are you having trouble seeing your computer screen? Are the traffic signs looking a little fuzzy? Are the things that you used to be able to see looking just a little out of focus? Dr. Wayne Fuller has been helping Coleman see better for years, and he's still located on 2nd Avenue between the Catholic Church and Highway 278. You can call his friendly staff at 256-734-1121, and they'll be happy to get you seeing better, whether it's with contacts, glasses designed just for you, or a low-cost alternative to LASIK. Again, Dr. Wayne Fuller is available at 256-734-1121.
Hey, it's Josh, the newest voice of Live 95, and your host for Joshin' Around. After a long summer vacation, we will return Tuesday the 28th at 7 p.m. Join me and we can talk about what's going on. See you the 28th at 7.
When a disaster occurs, neighbors and community organizations want to reach out and help. But this isn't always easy. That's where your local Coleman County VOAD can help. VOAD stands for Voluntary Organizations Active in Disaster. Your Coleman County VOAD serves to coordinate relief efforts throughout the county during times of crisis to ensure no area or family is left unassisted. But to do this, the Coleman County VOAD needs your help. Whether you're an individual, faith-based group, civic organization, or business, your Coleman County VOAD needs your help. To learn how you can be a part of the Coleman County VOAD, call the Coleman County EMA at 739-5410, 739-5410. Email ColemanCountyVOAD@gmail.com or search Coleman County VOAD on Facebook. Your Coleman County VOAD is Volunteer Organizations Active in Disaster. Friday Night Live returns to Live 95.
Nick Phillips on the carry, big hole, 40, 35, 30, 20, running away from Warriors.
Thursday night, August 23rd, as the Fairview Aggies travel to West Point to battle the Warriors.
Loads and fires complete at the 6-yard line. What a good catch by Hunter Appling.
If your business or organization would like to be a part of Friday Night Live, email studio@live95coleman.com. That's studio@live95coleman.com. Have your business or organization mentioned during each broadcast of Friday Night Live.
Fires into the end zone. It's caught. It's caught. Touchdown Raiders. Touchdown Raiders. Touchdown Raiders. The Good Hope Raiders have scored as the ball game comes to an end.
Friday Night Live returns to Live 95.
Thursday night,
August 23rd, as Fairview takes on West Point. Friday Night Live is an exclusive presentation of Live 95, Coleman's independent radio.
Welcome back. Live 95 is Coleman's independent radio.
You're listening to Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Cullman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Cullman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And now, once again, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Nethery.
Little D in the house with Understanding the Law. Welcome back. We have local attorney Melvin Hastings.
Getting the fastball. This is baseball. This ain't softball questions.
Getting some big questions. Yep. Remember, we have a call-in line at 256-737-9505. That's 256-737-9505. With any law question, Melvin's here to provide an answer to the best of his ability. So if you want to have that privilege to call in, please do so. Melvin, you want to repeat the question that Jay asked you before?
Yes. And he... So he asked, hey, what if, let's just talk about a divorce case. So you get in divorce and then your spouse, dives into your money, I guess, to hire a lawyer.
And you're fighting over the kids in the divorce.
And you're fighting over the kids in the divorce.
But you only have one pool of money, and
that's... Yes, I guess it'd be an issue, yep.
The husband's money.
All right. So let me tell you some stuff.
Or the wife's money, either way.
Yeah,
it could go either way.
It gets to be a mess. I'll tell y'all some stories, but... Here's an issue that comes up a lot in a law office. So, and I've had this numerous times, I have a father comes in, or a grandfather comes in, or grandmother, whichever one, but comes in and says, hey, my son or my grandson's in jail, I need you to represent him. Here's X amount of money, will you represent him? So they are the ones paying you and hiring you. So what you learn in law school, and what you always have to remember, who is your client? Your client is not grandpa or grandma or mom and dad is paying you. Your client is so and so that's sitting over here in jail.
That you have to.
You have to go visit. But that's your obligation. That is who you work for. But what happens is, grandma that come or grandpa that came paid you this money to represent him. Thinks that you're their lawyer.
And
you're going to do what they say. And I'm going to tell you, even in criminal cases, I've had this happen a lot of times. They'll be in there and, maybe the son is out having, maybe he's getting in trouble. Maybe he's got out of jail. He's out getting in trouble and all this stuff. And they say, we want you to file this or the judge will order him into rehab and this and that. So that puts me in a morally, I probably should do it because I probably should help this guy, do what I can to help this guy out, because morally I think it'd probably be a good deal if this person's all strung out on drugs is to get them into rehab, hopefully get them some help. But legally,
okay, so
I have to go to court, I have to go to the judge and say, judge, my client's on drugs. See, I've breached my attorney-client privilege. I've breached his confidentiality.
Mm-hmm.
I've incriminated him because guess what? Part of being out on bond is not to be doing illegal things, committing felonies, doing drugs, whatever else. So I can't go talk to the judge about, even though maybe everybody says, well, you ought to do what you can to help your client out. Well, that may be true. But I've just incriminated him. So the judge says, the judge can say, thank you, Mr. Hastings. I'm glad you told me your client's out there committing new crimes and using drugs and possessing drugs. I'm going to revoke his bond and stick him back in jail. Then I'm in trouble, a lot of trouble. And I'm going to tell you, that's happened to me numerous times. I have somebody comes in and says, they'll come in and say, look, I'm the one that paid you. And I said, I understand that, but you got to, this person's my client. This is who I have to deal with. And a lot of times I will just tell people, they'll be in there. So it could be a civil situation. It could be any type of a legal situation. So my client will be in there, and then whoever's, the banker's in there paying the money sitting in my office. Well, the one that's paying the money wants all the attention, wants to make all the decisions. And I, a lot of times I remind them, I said, look, this is my client. I have to, you know, I need to take care of them. I understand what you're saying. I'll listen to what you say. But ultimately, my obligation is to my client. Go ahead, Jay.
Don't you take a massive risk of losing or running off the money? I mean, if you don't do what the money wants you to do, they stop paying
you.
You're
right. Yes, absolutely, 100%.
God, Jay. What a situation to be in.
It gets to be a sticky mess. But most of the time, what I have found out is if you explain like I just did, and it's your demeanor and how you do it. If you sit there and say, look, this person's my client, you understand I've got to do what's for them. And they'll say, well, I know, I just want to get them help, I want to do this or do that. Most of the time when you explain it, that's fine. But yeah, now, you know, it's just like any other banker, man. They're the ones with the money. They wave it in front of your face and say, look, you know, you want the money, you better do what I say. Which I won't do that because it's not what, you can't pay me enough money. You know, hey, somebody comes in and gives you $100,000, you think, oh, Melvin, you're a daggone fool for not taking $100,000. Well, I take it $100,000 and lose my bar license. How am I going to make another $100,000? It's going to be hard for me to go out and make $100,000.
Well, it's ethics violation.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not worth it. No matter. Now, somebody come and pay me $5 million,
You wouldn't give it up. You worked too hard for law school.
Yeah,
I
wouldn't do it.
And that's the one thing that is good about you as an attorney is that money. Yes, you have to pay your bills, and yes, you have to do your job, but money that is waved in front of you in bribery manner, it's just not going to work.
Yeah.
Not for you.
No. And I'm going to tell you, it does it for a lot. I know people, it's funny, I was talking to someone today who was, we was talking about, oh, I know what it was. It was another lawyer, and we was talking about probate judge, and at one time back, few years ago, I was considered running for probate judge, and I was like, man, you know, that's been tried and done with attorneys, and it's just not going to happen because overall, the general public just don't like lawyers. I'm in a profession where people just don't like you.
I might agree with
that. For whatever else. They just don't. But now, and I was the same way until I went to law school. So, I mean, I'm biased now, of course, but, you know, when I was in my 20s and 30s, I was like, I hated lawyers. I thought they were scumbags. Because that's the perception you get. That's what you're told. And that's kind of... And unfortunately, there are a bunch of scumbags that are lawyers.
But first and
they
foremost,
ruin it.
You're a good Christian.
And they ruin it, yeah.
And secondly, you're a good attorney.
Yeah. Well, I try to be.
And thirdly, you're a good husband and you're a good father.
Well, I try to be.
And them things is what makes you a better lawyer, in my opinion. And I know that I do this show with you, but I've known you for a long time. Mm-hmm. And you're a stand-up kind of guy. And you say what you're going to do and you do what you're going to say. And that's how you are.
Yeah.
And that's why I enjoy doing the show with you. Because I want people to know you can go out there and get a fraudulent lawyer. You can pay out as much money as you want. You can do whatever you want to do. And you can hire whoever you want to. But don't bank you're going to get it back.
Yeah.
With ethics. With standing up for what's right. I want to go back to the adoption situation.
Yeah.
I want to know what happens to that child. Since that child has no voice. You just told me that they get a new birth certificate. When they are adopted out,
yes,
they take on a new name. But what happens when they're grown?
Yeah. So here's the voice of any, they're called adoptees, but any adopted child, any child that's up for adoption, their voice is called a guardian ad litem. So they have a voice, a mouthpiece in court. It's called a guardian ad litem. It's a lawyer. You have to be a lawyer to be a guardian ad litem. They're supposed to represent them in their best interest. You know, so, and listen, man, it's just GALs. I know a bunch of them. I do a lot of guardian ad litem work, and it's a fine line because you're trying to do what's best for that child. Because you know the dilemma Mingo was talking about with Jay, the moral, the legal, and the ethical. Sometimes they don't all go together.
Right.
Okay, what I was talking about with the guy on drugs. Okay, so I'm representing this guy on drugs. Morally, should I get him help and go say, Judge, you know, he's having a lot of problems. Either, you know, we'd like to get him into rehab or stuff. I mean, that's probably the best thing to do. That's the good citizen type thing to do. But ethically, can I do that? You know, because I am incriminating my client. So I probably can't ethically do it. Can I legally do it? I could probably legal. It's probably not illegal for me to do it. It's just unethical. So sometimes you run into situations where you're trying to figure out, well, Morally and legally, this is right. Ethically, it's not. Ethically and legally, that's right. But morally, it's not. You know, all that stuff. Most of the time, it all runs together. What's legal, what's ethical, is what's moral. But sometimes you run out of fine lines. Mm-hmm. So that's where the stuff. And I appreciate what stuff you said a minute ago because that is true. I try to do what's good for people and help them out. And I mean, make a little bit of a living with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I got to make a living. But
well, of course you do.
I got to live in Coleman County. I got to live in Alabama. My family lives here and grows up here. And how people perceive Coleman and how we take care of Coleman is. I mean, I've got an interest in it. I plan on my boys when they get older living here.
But
too.
You answer to the Lord first.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that to me means everything.
Yes.
Because I've been in the court system. This is my 16th year, and I've used 4 lawyers in this town. Two of them, including yourself, you know, persevere because you do what is right, and you're going to stand for what's right. And to me, that means everything.
Yep. So, and I appreciate that, but here we go. So the guardian ad litem is that child's mouthpiece. That child doesn't have a say-so in what normally happens in whether it's a juvenile case or a adoption case like this, the GL makes a recommendation, you know, and I'm gonna tell you, everybody tries to do what's right, but sometimes you're swayed one way or the other because I mean sometimes you just get mad at parents. You know, I can be a GAL and I get mad at mom, I get mad at daddy, or get mad at both of them. You know, and if you get, so I've got parents here that's just fussing and raising cane. Maybe one of them sees that we're trying to do what's right, and maybe one of them just don't like the system, and the system's bad, and they hate the system and all that. So they're just in the ear all the time telling you that you're just part of the system, you're part of the problems, and that's their kid and all that. So the human part of you, you know, I mean, it does take hold of you like, you know what, I'd like to...
smack
you across the mouth, mm-hmm. but you know you got to be careful because you can't let that outside displeasure of that parent affect your decision. You know, you going in there and you making a recommendation, you need to forget all this outside stuff and do what's really good for the child. And I guess I've always been 100%. Children belong with their parents, 100%.
Absolutely, I agree 100%. With that.
If they can't belong to their parents, then they belong to their family, to their relatives, or to some friends or somebody that they have a relationship. When you're going out and putting childs in foster homes away from families, I just don't. You break that link. I just don't like it.
It disconnects them.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I've always been a strong advocate. Let's make sure that every single avenue, you know, this is a serious deal. That's a serious deal when you say, all right, I'm going to allow this adoption.
I'm struggling with the last name thing. I'm telling
you
right now.
I know.
I'm struggling with it because I couldn't imagine, you know. Myself, I found out some information when I got older.
Yeah.
And I carry the last name that I've carried my whole entire life. I could not imagine not having that last name and someone having the ability to take that from me as a child and say, okay, well, this is your last name and this is what you're going to carry.
What in real life happens with an adoption? So in this situation, this child has a new father.
Legally.
Yeah, legally mm-hmm. has a new father and has a new, is going to have a new last name.
Mm-hmm.
And really doesn't have a say-so in it.
And so when they get 18 and that parent comes back into their life and they have the ability to make the choice themselves.
Then they can do what they want to, yes.
So do they have the legal right to change
once
their name?
Once they get 18, 19, yes, they can.
So let's make
your
that
name
clear.
Your name changes. See, I didn't realize this. You can change your name however you want to. I remember one person come in and change all three of their names, their first name, middle name, and last name.
Mm-hmm.
Got a totally different person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so,
and are they issued a new social security number?
They still keep the same numbers and everything else. They just have a different
just
name.
Just a different name. Different name. Different birth certificate. The name on the birth certificate
changed. Yes, I assume that they can go do that.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. You're asking me some.
I know.
I know.
you know me. I'm going to pick at
when
you.
When you're saying it, I don't know that you can get another birth certificate. Mm-hmm. I don't know about that. I don't.
But then how is that different than a legal adoptee than you having the ability as an adult to change your name?
I would think that you... I would think if you went and did a name change, and I'm probably just overthinking this, that you would be able to go get your license. You'd be able to get a new, I guess you'd go apply for a new Social Security card for this name or whatever it is. Because you can't be.
But you would still be born in that name. And even though you changed your name is still going to be like this, that you were born with this name.
I don't know. I don't know. You may can.
I want to know. We're
going to
look it up.
I know. It's something kind of interesting. I don't know. As an adult, you may be able to go get another birth certificate. But I just don't. I don't think you
can. I stumped Melvin. I stumped Melvin.
You did on that one. I haven't thought about that one. But so somebody gets their names. But yeah, it's just. Let's say that a child talks to his lawyer, his GAL, and his lawyer says, look, do you want this? And I do. I'll ask, depending on their age, once they get to be 8, 9, 10, you know, you got to be a little more careful with them. But 11, 12, 13, of course, you just talk with them, mm-hmm. especially the teenagers. But you got an 8 or 9-year-old kid, you know, you sit down and talk like an 8 or 9 year old kid, like you're talking to an 8 or 9 year old kid, and ask them, what do you think about this? What do you think about Bob Smith now being your daddy? You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? He's going to be your daddy.
Or your mama.
Be your mama. Jane Smith's going to be your mama. It's going to, you'll have a new birth certificate and stuff like that, you know, and, you know, it's just, it's all dealing with age, maturity. Some 8-year-olds are more mature than 11-year-olds. Some 12-year-olds mm-hmm. is not as mature as an 8-year-old. So you really have to. It's a case by case deal. You have to figure out with the child. But you know, some of them just get excited. It's, oh yeah, that's just something new for them. So mm-hmm. you know, you're trying to figure out.
Well, they're
out,
excited about having a parent that is going to participate and be
yes,
part
yes.
of.
Yes, and in those situations, I have 100% no problem. Mm-hmm. It's this when it's you know. Is the parent been out of their life for 6 months totally? Is it something that the parent made a decision on? Is it something that the other party maybe had influence on? When it's so iffy, I just don't like it. I just don't like it. So.
Well, this is Danielle Little D with Understanding the Law with local attorney Melvin Hastings. We will be right back in just a moment.
Hey, it's Josh, the newest voice of Live 95, and your host for Joshin' Around. After a long summer vacation, we will return Tuesday the 28th at 7 p.m. Join me and we can talk about what's going on. See you the 28th at 7.
Attention Coleman business owners. You are the people we want to hear from. All of us here at Live 95 want to take a moment to remind you of what life was like before Live 95. Yeah, so we don't want to go back to that. This is just a friendly reminder that Live 95 can help you. If you're a new business just getting started, or a well-established large business, Live 95 can actually help you get tax breaks on your tax bill.
Woo-hoo!
Hey, we're not kidding. Seriously. Send us an email at studio@live95coleman.com today. Or visit our website, live95coleman.com, and click on support to find out more right now. Do it. Thanks for listening to Live 95. We're Coleman's independent radio.
Are you having trouble seeing your computer screen? Are the traffic signs looking a little fuzzy? Are the things that you used to be able to see looking just a little out of focus? Dr. Wayne Fuller has been helping Coleman see better for years, and he's still located on 2nd Avenue between the Catholic Church and Highway 278. You can call his friendly staff at 256-734-1121, and they'll be happy to get you seeing better, whether it's with contacts, glasses designed just for you, or a low-cost alternative to LASIK. Again, Dr. Wayne Fuller is available at 256-734-1121.
Friday Night Live returns to Live 95.
Nick Phillips on the carry, big hole, 40, 35, 30, 20, running away from Warriors.
Thursday night, August 23rd, as the Fairview Aggies travel to West Point to battle the Warriors.
loads and fires complete at the 6-yard line. What a good catch by Hunter Appling.
If your business or organization would like to be a part of Friday Night Live, email studio at live95coleman.com. That's studio at live95coleman.com. Have your business or organization mentioned during each broadcast of Friday Night Live.
Fires into the end zone. It's caught! It's caught! Touchdown Raiders! Touchdown Raiders! Touchdown Raiders! The Good Hope Raiders have scored as the ball game comes to an end!
Friday Night Live returns to Live 95.
Thursday night,
August 23rd, as Fairview takes on West Point. Friday Night Live is an exclusive presentation of Live 95, Coleman's Independent Radio.
Welcome back. Live 95 is Coleman's Independent Radio. You're listening to Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Coleman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Coleman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And now, once again, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Nethery.
I look nothing like Big D. I have hair. This is Little D Danielle with Understanding the Law with local attorney Melvin Hastings. We have about 15 minutes left in our show, and our call-in line is 256-737-9505. That's 256-737-9505. All right, Melvin, and we'll go back to this question.
We're going to circle back around.
We're going to circle back around to Jay's question of, we have a husband and wife that are married, and they file for divorce, and custody comes in to play, but we only have one pool of money, whether it be the husband's or whether it be the wife's money, because only one of them work, but it's that amount of money that they have to work with both attorneys and fighting for the children.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's going to be their money. That, you know, it's not his money or her money. Just like it's not his kid or his refrigerator or her refrigerator. You know, cars sometimes get separated out, but it's going to be their money. But let me give you an example of a, this was a case that happened 15 years ago. So this guy, he's divorced from his wife. They get back together. Well, they do kind of get back together. They have kids. They kind of get back together, I guess, for a while. And all of a sudden, they decide to split ways because this ain't going to work out. So in the meantime, he's gotten, his business has picked up, he's made more money, he's better off than what he was when she first divorced him. So wife says, I'm going to divorce you again. We was common law married. Of course, husband says, no, we're not. I'm not, we was never married. Yes, you stayed at my house, you may have lived in my house, we have kids together or whatever, but I've never held you out as being my wife. We did, because we tried this case. We didn't file income tax together. There's no evidence of anything that you can show where I've listed you as my wife. Right? So he comes in one day, and I mean, he was fuming. He was mad, and I understand. And afterwards, I know why he's mad. I'd been mad too. Out of his business was written a, seemed like it was $3,500 or $5,000 check to pay for her lawyer. So he has a business. He's saying we're not married. She had access to the business checks. So she takes and writes, I think it was a $3,500 check to her lawyer so that she can divorce this guy.
And signs his name to
her.
I don't know.
I believe, boy, I don't know.
Because obviously she may have.
I know it, but she may have signed his name.
I think she signed his name.
Oh, it'd be a forgery. It'd be a forgery if you signed somebody's name.
But that's stealing from the business.
It should be. Yeah, yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So come on, Melvin.
I'm thinking that his name was signed to that check.
So that's probably what made him even more mad, because he was fuming mad. He was. Now that I, because like I said, it's been at least 15 years ago when we did this case. So he was.
So we got his
name was on there, and he couldn't do nothing about it. Because guess what? During these last few years or last few months, she signed his name 100 different times.
There you go.
So it's one of them. Mm-hmm. When we talk about implied, it's almost like it's implied she has permission to,
exactly
to sign
right.
his name. So in that situation, I mean, I just don't. That's not fair. You know what I'm saying? Because if it was money that they had in an account together, okay. You know, then whoever gets the money out goes file and pays whatever else, that's one thing. But when you're getting into another business and taking it from a business, because you're right, that is the business's money. That ain't mm-hmm. their money. I mean, she probably could get in a lot of trouble. He tried, of course, because he's mad, but it didn't get anywhere. Mm-hmm. And nobody prosecuted for it.
Because she had signed that check many times before.
She signed that check before.
Mm-hmm. And that's where you have to be careful, you know. They say, which common law marriage does not exist now.
So
we have that in our favor.
Yep. So, well, you got to remember this, because I just did a common law marriage issue. It was in a probate case. But see, these people were common law married for a long time. I think it was last year what the Alabama legislature says, from this point on, you can't be common law married. You have to go through a ceremony to do this. We don't have common law marriages. So let's say that was January the 1st of 2017, let's just say. So December the 31st of 2016 and back, if you was together, you can say we had common law marriage. Mm-hmm. But from that day forward, there's no more common law marriages. But
Giving your own lady permission to write from your business account.
Yeah, but you got to be careful.
Common law. Yes.
So, to answer Jay's question, no matter who's paying you, how the money's coming, or anything like that, it's your client. You know what I'm saying? So in that case, you know, if wife comes and gets all the money out of bank and brings it to me, now I represent her, then she's my client no matter how she got the money. Now, what gets to be an issue, a really legal issue, is that money ill, if that money's illegal or obtained illegally and you know it, because now as a lawyer, you've just set yourself up for money laundering. So let's say that wife went and stole that money from the husband's parents, stole it out of their basement, out of their wherever, stole it out of their safe. I know she stole it. She came, gave it to me, and then I deposited it in my account. That is, so what I have done is help clean up dirty money. That's dirty money because mm-hmm. you stole it. Mm-hmm. And if I know it, and then I put it in my account as a way to get it through, that's money laundering. That's why they call it laundering. You're cleaning up dirty money. And boy, you can get yourself. So what I've done is, hey, I got me a big old chunk, $100,000. And I'm thinking, all right, man, this is a nice payday. Well, then tomorrow the FBI is knocking on your door, because money laundering is a federal offense. So the FBI is knocking on your door, and the marshals are, and you're getting arrested, and you're going to court in front of a federal judge, and you're in a mess. It ain't worth it.
So we have this money that is his money. He goes and files for divorce and takes and writes the attorney a check. And then she goes and hires her an attorney to counter the divorce.
Yep.
From the same account.
Yes.
They're both responsible and both have the ability and the right to that money in that account.
Yes.
And that is the answer to the question.
You're right. So no matter how you get the money, you know what I'm saying? Your obligation is to your client.
Now, just say they have separate businesses, but they're married, and they have joint accounts with both business money flowing through the same account. Let's do it that way, okay?
Yeah.
Now it might complicate it a little bit for you.
But anything that's common, anything that's used during the marriage becomes marital property. So if I'm getting money through business, if I'm getting money through inheritance, mm-hmm. I'm getting money through, or just won the lottery or whatever else, if I'm pooling that money into an account and we're using, okay, here's a good example. I have an account just in my name and all. And I've got a bunch of money in that account. And my spouse has got an account in just her name or his name. And it's just got a little bit of money in there. If I'm using my big bank account, my money, to pay for, using it during my marriage to pay for things in my marriage, it is marital property. Yep, mm-hmm. Marital money. It is marital property subject to be divided.
That's
right. So they can get into it. That's why I say that does it. It doesn't matter how that money, you know, who does it. You know, here gets to be the dilemma, and I get this all the time. You know, one of the spouses come in and said, yeah, one of the questions is, do you have accounts? You have joint accounts, separate accounts? How do you do all that? They said, we put all our money in one account. So then next thing, the bell starts ringing in my head. I said, all right. So what are you going to do when you wake up tomorrow or tonight you go out and try to use your debit card or whatever else and that bank account's wiped out? Mm-hmm. I said, because you realize that you can do it yourself. And I always tell myself, look, I'm not telling you to do it. I want you to realize that your spouse can do it. So that is something that y'all need to discuss and take care of now because it happens. It happens a lot.
All the time.
It happens. I've got clients where they've come in there and obviously they took the money out of the accounts. Mm-hmm. And then I've had clients come in there with all the money's out of the accounts. I said, look, man, I can't pay. I can't do nothing. This person's
wiped
me out. So
he paid his wife out of the joint account, or he paid his attorney out of the joint account, and the wife paid her attorney out of the joint account. And you just better hope that whoever checks or cashes first.
Yeah, cashes first.
The second one's
gonna bounce. It does it. You're right. You're right. So, you know, and that gets to be an issue. So what I have learned since I've been doing this 16 years is if you throw fuel on the fire, it just doesn't benefit mm-hmm. nobody.
That's right.
You're not getting anywhere. So I always try to encourage.
A prenup.
a prenuptial, yeah. But I always try to encourage. I said, look, go talk with them about it. If you're going to take money out of the account, just take half. Mm-hmm. Don't go take it all. Mm-hmm. Because I tell them, I said, if both your names on that account and you go take all that money out and that other spouse starts writing checks and they start bouncing, they're not going to go after that other spouse just for those checks. The bank's not.
That's right.
They're going to go after both
That's
of
exactly
you.
That's exactly
so
right.
So you're in trouble too. So you're better off making sure that things are paid. And now what we have, and most circuits have it, is they have a standing order that says, so you file for a divorce, there's an order entered by the court almost immediately that kind of goes out with every case that says you keep things essentially like they are. Whoever pays the bills, you kind of keep paying the bills like that. And let's try to keep things as civil as possible. Well, of course, that don't happen. Most of the time it doesn't happen. But let's try to keep things as civil as possible so that we're not just causing a big disruption. And that is very, very important when you've got kids involved. Because, again, and I tell people this all the time, divorces are emotional, of course. I mean, there's a lot of emotion in them, and people act off of emotion, and a lot of times that action is not rational. They're mad, they're hurt, they're just disgusted, whatever the situation is, and when you're in that frame of mind, you're not going to make really good decisions.
Done out of anger and hurt.
Yeah, yes, you know, and so I tell people again, I was like, look, when we're talking about money, when we're talking about property, not kids, just keep kids completely out because it's not a business decision. But with money and property, it is a business decision. You and this person are business partners, and what one does and to the other can hurt both of you. And let's just get the emotions out, be sensible about doing this stuff, and then it will make things easier. So once you get that property stuff out and hopefully get a lot of the motion out, then you got to work on the second part of the equation, which are the kids. You got to try to get the emotion out as much as you can and the anger out and say, let's do what's right for the kids. Well, absolutely. Everybody, 100% of the people is always going to say, well, I'll always do what's right for kids. That just, they don't,
saying and doing is two different things.
It doesn't happen because, again, even though you try and you want to, that emotion part runs, gets in there, that anger gets in there, and frustration gets in there, and maybe you don't feel like you're getting treated right, and it just gets to be, it gets to be a mess. And listen to this. So not only that, when you're doing these type of cases, you got kids, and they don't, I mean, I say as they get older, but I'm going to tell you, there's some pretty smart little 4, 5, and 6-year-old kids. Boy, they play it too. They'll play them like, and I'll tell parents, I say, look, you got an 8-year-old kid or 11-year-old kid that's playing you like a fiddle. They're playing mama like a fiddle and they're playing daddy like a fiddle because they realize that their whole life, mom and dad's been the boss. Now that mom and dad's get separated and there's big issues, that kid feels like, you know what? I'm a boss now a little bit because whatever I want, I can go get it from daddy. Mm-hmm. Whatever I want, I can go get it from mama too. And play both sides. So when you got all of that involved in there, it really gets to be a mess.
Well, and let's make it perfectly clear. The spouse that is vindictive enough to go and take all of the money out of the account, let me tell you something, in a court of law, you'll give it back.
Yeah. In the end, it's going to hurt you.
It will hurt you. And
that's what I tell them. I said, look, be responsible. You gotta make a good business decision because decisions you make, they're gonna bring it up. You're gonna have to tell why you did it, and it's just not gonna be good.
Well, and marriage is a business decision. Yep. It really is. I mean, you're going into it in a joint effort. Yep. Well, this is Little D.
Hey, y'all, join in tomorrow night when the church will tell you how to spend your money under God and the Lord.
Here we go. This is Little D and Melvin Hastings with Understanding the Law. Tomorrow night we have the Big D Radio Show at 6:30. We will have Kurt's Closet in, and Christopher Greer will be here. And also we will have a husband and wife, Mr. and Miss Johnson, that are coming. And Big D will be back. So tune in tomorrow night. We will see you next Tuesday at 6 o'clock. This is Little D and Melvin, and we're out. Have a good evening.